Society of Contentment. Sounds like to me, yeah. You think so? It sounds like, but, you know, these things can be deceiving. And I think we look around and we see that it's deceiving. And I don't know why people don't respond to it. It always amazes me. Partly I'm dismayed. At some level, with all the complaining, I get a bit angry, but not to the point that I just have to pass it off as just a bunch of people who, just talkers, I suppose, come here every week to explain certain aspects of how to move things along, and it just doesn't get picked up, generally. And there's a few of you that do, and I appreciate that you're doing that, and particularly for yourselves. You're realizing as you move through that there's just a different way to look at this and how to proceed. And there's a way to proceed against the obstructions that sit in the system that are there for various reasons. But to me, I stopped to try and rationalize what they were more than to say, okay, there's somebody that has an opposition. What might it be? And if it's not rational or lawful or objective, then we can address it fairly quickly. And we do. Everything else is just a bunch of noise, and everything else is not going to get us where we need to go. And I say get us where we need to go because I see a world that I was brought up in through, totally oblivious to the reality of it, but we're promised certain things that do sit there. And it's almost a challenge. This place was almost set up as a challenge for those that could take advantage and exploit others if they could get away with it. And that, I guess, in the basics, is our duty to stop that against us, and maybe, hopefully, if we got a little bit bigger heart, against other people that do that, that are victims of that, that may not see it. Whether or not you want to go completely altruistic and continue on however it is up to, I guess, every one of us. But in the basics, if we allow something to happen to somebody else, we can't very well complain it's going to happen to us, I suppose, in the future. So looking around, there's an objective basis, it's not my opinion, that said this place was supposed to be different, or it could be. Again, we're given a little clue, the Republic, if you can keep it, in the United States of America. People maybe give lip service to that by even just speaking it but not moving further. But that was really, to me, a challenge. It was, again, if you look at the symbolism within the story, the woman on the steps asking, what kind of government did you give us? That's a total failure to begin with, now that I understand what's going on. So we were essentially, as I said, you can start to see the prison being built right there. But we don't respond at all in the proper way. And then we get ourselves so deep, it's real hard to figure out how we're supposed to respond. And so it's in just kind of, in a way, I don't know, like I said, I don't know what if I have an emotion to throw at it, I don't even know what my emotions are. I can be all kinds of things. It depends on how I look at the problem. At the end of the thought or the end of the day, I just have to say, I just persist. I continue to give the information. I hope that someone comes along to at least protect themselves. I tell you all what's come on, how it comes on, how to defeat it, the stuff that we can. Watch out for the stuff that we can't. Let's see if we can avoid that sometime and hope that everyone starts to throw in wherever they see it. Again, I talked about this a long time ago, an analogy. You'd grab on the edifice, the rope that's attached to the edifices of power, and you tug. And you tug for all you're worth on the little knot you have on your rope. And so we have different ways to get at this. I think some people misinterpret what I'm saying, or they're just not going to interpret what I'm saying because it means, really, what I'm saying means you have to go beyond your knowledge. You have to go beyond the question, what do we do? And you have to start doing something. And so that's the point. I don't know what else to say. It's not my world. It's not a peaceful place. My whole psyche is totally different than even when I talk to you here. And yet I know that if I see people, I guess for the first part, I see people getting hurt. And I see people getting hurt on real basic stuff. And even if you got over past that, you do real well. But you're that little bit. And that's what these people prey on, this thing that's set up around that we fall into. We see this, as I describe it, the open-air prison that can be described in many different ways. So I'm so off my tabs, but I'm really not. I'm talking about if you see a problem that you think you can resolve or you think you're capable, jump in. Don't wait till, like this woman here, as I'm going to talk after the fact, I've been saying. And then I see a different problem now develop because I've mentioned this gentleman, John Corbett. Not James Corbett, but John Corbett. And I said, contact them if you're interested in the TSA thing or the travel thing that way and these things. And maybe you can team up with someone like that. At the time, I didn't know. I have a new piece of information. It can be something, and I have now see something that may be a potential problem. But if you know what the potential problem is, or you could work with someone like this who actually does have access, because he is the privileged few by that system occupier, and he might be able to be motivated to move forward. But I do see a problem, and this is what I look for. I don't come here to tell you the news. To me, it's all notice on what you all should be doing, or you can do, or what you can collect up to do to accomplish the things that we have let go, the exploiters took advantage of. And if you look at, not the only thing you find, but when you look and see what people talk about, about how this thing works, they'll tell you that there's exploitation points. Partly why I tell you about the silent weapons for quiet wars, that's an exploitation point. The protocols of the elders of Zion, even if it's, well, let's get beyond the counterfeit, which means there was original. Let's say even if that was a set up document, somebody had some insight that I found was essentially what I don't know about myself. And so there's knowledge in people around the world and over time beyond us that can actually use that knowledge that do. We look at the news today on what's going on. It's just, if nothing else, it's just a big embarrassment. If we were to call ourselves some civilization, what an embarrassment that we come here to do this. And these people, these exploiters, the organized criminals, or a caucusocracy, is running the place. Now, I don't know about you, but even if I reduce it down just to me, just to what my property is and this and that, I don't really like when people come and run my property, ruin my stuff, that try to take over, especially without an objective basis, especially where a black and white is saying otherwise. And where I, again, be careful of interpreting. The interpretation can be problematic, is what the Bar Association does. They'll interpret what the law is instead of declaring what the law is anymore. And I won't get into all the nuances there, but there's ways to defeat it all. And I say defeat it in the context of you don't subject yourself to it, and you show, when you research and know enough, you can find where the limitation on those that purport to have authority don't have it. And then I've explained over many broadcasts how you take that unwarranted act against your property or your right, or they control it or they condition it without actual lawful warrant under the color of a warrant. And that's a crime. That's this whole thing, to my mind, at this point, until I can see different anywhere, is really all that has to be done. And it's not, because I tread real lightly when I get here, and I don't talk too much about this, but we talk about it periodically. I hope those of you that have an ear to hear are picking this stuff up and starting to apply it slowly. It does take a while, especially the way we communicate here. You go a lot faster if you did your own research, but that's neither here nor there. That's up to you to decide. That you find that you just can't stick it in the gorillas. You just can't stick your rights and property and their criminality in the gorilla's face. You just can't do that. The criminals, the occupier's face, they'll hurt you. And so there's a whole other subtle dynamic going on. Why? Because we let this place go to a caucusocracy. It's pretty simple that way, in my mind, I guess. I don't know how else to describe this to garner any more favor or garner any more attention or getting people to move this way. I guess I'm a little bit, my mind keeps popping up. Last week I went back in and all I have is a little thing in the back of RLM when I go post the broadcast, and it shows how many people showed up through the website. During this broadcast, relative to the broadcast page for Behind the Woodshed, I had 4 people show up. Now, I don't know what all the numbers are. I don't know where they're all at. But I start looking at that and I wonder, what am I doing? That said, 4 people showed up. Now, I know there's a lot of places out there that have a lot more. And as I remind myself about that, again, I go off on my tangent here. But this is Behind the Woodshed here, if you haven't ever heard that name. This is for references to the blogcaster and links, when I finally get to them, the BTWRLM 349 will help you get there, reallibertymedia.com. And you can go through and find whatever links I'll eventually post here when we start talking to them. And anyway, and thank you to Jules over at UCYD TV that continues to simulcast, even though the lights are kind of semi-out over there. And then Sound Minds, all you all folks over there, and I thank you very much for what you do. And Sound Minds at putting up, when I put the title, I read the title, and he puts up the internet on a video. He puts up, I noticed last week, pretty quickly, most of the video page, the website pages I speak to. So a lot of hard work over there. I appreciate all that, that energy. And normalization of ignorance on YouTube, post the broadcasts, and then just in case over at cloud9alpha.d-program.org. Thank you. I noticed you were back in over at mine. So all you folks that are promoting, you know, getting the word out, I really appreciate it. Obviously, I would appreciate that. I don't do this just because I really don't like to hear myself talk. Like I said, I'm a different guy. I'd be doing other things, but there's a harm in the world that are harming people that I see don't need to harm them. They're actually harming themselves. I'm asking you to stop harming yourself. And it's not my rule. It's that there's people out there that have taken on themselves to go ahead and do that under the color of an authority. But well, I think Grimner has coined the term authorita. It's this, you know, the word, the term that shows you that it's not real authority. And so, how do you get at that? That's what I talk about here. A lot of people don't want to understand it this way. They don't understand what this is about. They'd rather profess how much they know that I can see that they actually don't know. And I don't say that in any, I tell you, it's real hard for me to say that. It sounds kind of arrogant, but I have a black and white objective basis and experience that I can put up against most everybody. And it tells me real quick what's going on, I mean, really fast. And those of you that listen for a while, I think you know that. And so there's a way to look at this whole thing that you find yourself, I liken it to be in the battlefield. I do liken it as a war. The war's against you if you didn't see 9-1-1. If you don't admit, you can acknowledge that they're doing it wrong and it's all a mess. But that was planned and you never saw it, and it continues. It's our problem. Your problem, my problem, our problem. And that was the obvious one. There's so many more obstructions and obfuscations inside this thing we call government anymore. It's hard to see the reality. And so what have I said before? I said what showed me part of that reality was getting to the law of the land. No, not the phrase in the Constitution. The literal land law, that land grant law. And then after all the long time, I could start to parse out how this thing really is supposed to work and apply the principles there to other similar subject matter and how that works, and see this whole thing the way it is, and how to apply oneself to all of that, and how to start to make a pushback and a change. Become effective in your, whether it's consternation, fear, or your dismay, and or your just empathy to want to get something done right, see things going right. There's really a way to do it. And so many people I see fail because they don't do it or on the right subject matter. So here we are. Let's go to what I've said. If you fight, you have this law of the land world, which is the reality on the ground for a purpose that sits in trust law, grant law, more than rule and regulation. Then you have this other thing called administrative law or administrative rule, implementation of law, that's a different beast but very, very similar. And I said, when you work through the agencies and the government trying to assimilate you into their normalcy and confine you and constrict you, and like we see the government blames you for things it allowed, then like 9-1-1, and then they blamed you as an enemy combatant for allowing it somehow. And you're now, like I said before in a prior broadcast, presumption of innocence when? And I see not a lot of follow through on this, so I don't know what people think when I'm saying this stuff. Some of you acknowledge how important that is and that you haven't received it. If you haven't received it, then you realize what you're up against doesn't care about it, and you better rethink what you're doing and how you approach it. Some of the rest of you maybe know, and you just kind of continue. But I've said you have to work this thing ahead of time. Now here's a story that came out that called my attention to the problem that someone's worked trying to help out others, but that we actually may see a refinement that I have to tell you about as well relative to that help. Now, I'm not a fan of a bar association members, and that's because relative to land law of the land, the attorneys are legal, not law, and they really do not understand land law at all. They do not and will never assert trust breaches or grant law breaches or relationship between the government, which at that point is not sovereign. And it's under obligation and duty. They will never, never, ever pose that. And I see the failure here in this story that I'll be saying They're showing, I'll give it to you here. The California woman sues TSA for detaining her, forcing her to submit to groin search. Now, we've heard this story before, but someone stepped up and went to John Corbett to help remedy this. Well, turns out, I just found out 2 nights ago, I guess it was, reading the margin of his website, he's actually an attorney. That caused me to go back and look at what he was saying again a little more closely. I've told you, I've found in all my life in dealing with attorneys, I think I've found four actual lawyers who are bar members. And three of those people got out after they tried to assert law and the system would not allow them. And that's how I learned part of what I know from them, showing me how to do the legal, pointing out the law and the distinction and how to go through. Let's say, for instance, a lesson I was taught by one of the guys, great guy, he's no longer an attorney. He was a lawyer. He did law. He found out the system was absolutely something he couldn't even stomach, and he got out. But he showed me how to write what to look for in writing a habeas corpus. And here's how subtle this is that I guess that's why I can't convince people. This thing is so subtle that my problem that he saw, and he invited me to come in at 4 a.m. to his office. That's when he got to his office. So because he saw my paperwork trying to help somebody, I'd written a habeas corpus to get somebody out of jail for 3 times. He was given one of the copies and he contacted me to come to his office so he could explain that to me. And he sat me down and said, you have all the points, but you don't understand how the judge works and what they do, and they don't think about it. They just open a bench book and they go right through the book, and you either have in order what you're supposed to be the way he expects to see it or she expects to see it, or you don't. And if you don't, they deny it. He said, you take all you have and then reorder it to what here. Go, here's the statute. Here's how it lays out. And this is what you've said is right. What you'd have to do is order it up. All I did is went home, rewrote it. By that, a couple hours later, I refiled that thing. You had to say, this is hours of travel, too, to go between the place I was and the public seat, if you will, where a friend was in jail. And all I did was take all the information I had before and reorder it. And that, my friend, was kicked out of jail on a habeas that would not be heard at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's the worst time they throw it out because it's most inconvenient. This tells you that about the system itself as well. And so the subtlety here is not only do you have to communicate, but there's a way to communicate. And to my experience, if you have all the elements, you may be completely compatible with what you're supposed to say. But if it doesn't meet the system's interpretation of that or how it works through it, why? Because they have liabilities too when you find that out. And so they follow the code, if you will, their way so they don't make a mistake that they found. If they do it any other way, they make mistakes. They don't want to see that for a couple of reasons. One that is in just a second, you find them out. So all I did is I took all the same information, I went to the book, and I went through and I ordered it out the way the statute said it would be done. And by that time, by 2 o'clock the next morning, my friend's making a phone call. They throw me out on the street. They wouldn't hear the habeas. That's another trick. So you start learning these things, and you start understanding you're not up against a normalcy. Well, you're normalcy bias, but you're not up against a normalcy that's in the law. It's in what they can get away with and how you bring them under scrutiny and that they don't like it. There's a whole lot of lessons in this that I can't convey to you. You just have to understand what I'm telling you. There's certain ways to do things, and there's certain ways to communicate. I'm not saying engage and argue with the system. I'm saying they have a certain way they deal with it. That eliminates that for you as a question, and now they have to deal with the condition. How they dealt with a habeas is to throw my friend out. What does that mean? Well, when they throw you out, you're no longer restrained of your liberty, are you? They don't. The petition goes moot. Not mute, moot, M-O-O-T. There's no purpose, because you're released. And so you have to, so they don't even treat this honestly either. Now, I've learned this a long, long time ago. And so when you say that the habeas isn't working, that might be, but I also know that I had 3 filings that didn't work until I ordered it upright, and then it worked. And so we have, a different way to look at this that we've failed in the past, that we now subscribe to just complete, it is pretty much tyranny, but I mean, we haven't proscribed for ourselves a path through. And so, way off point. But here, California woman sues TSA for detaining her. When I read through that, I'm encouraged that someone's going to sue. But my view on this was, it was after the fact. So as I've told you before, this is administrative condition. I said, before you go in, the TSA and the courts have said you have to work this out administratively. As I say that, my mind just flat. No one's going to do this. But anyway, I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to remind you. Why? Because this translates to every other administrative imposition that you'll find, just in the subject matter change. California woman sues TSA for detaining her, forcing her to submit to groin search. The blue-shirted TSA employees, of which all travelers are familiar, hold the title jobs transport security officer. But, and this is as written by the professional troublemaker, John Corbett, not James Corbett, don't get confused, transportation security officer. But despite the officer title emblazoned upon the plastic badge of their chest, TSA screeners are not law enforcement officers, do not have the authority to make arrests or hold travelers for any length of time, and if you break the law at a checkpoint, their only option is to call the real police to deal with the situation. Unfortunately, the plastic badge appears to occasionally cause TSA screeners to forget the boundaries of their authority. All right, so here we have boundaries of authority. He talks about that. There's his jurisdiction as well, and also what they're supposed to do. This is why you have to analyze it. This is already too complicated for most everybody. And I tell you, that's just partly because they didn't, where did your presumption of innocence go? And now they've put you into this. So anytime you are stepping into this before, after the fact, if you will, here, then you're going to be submitted to this. And this is where I start to listen carefully, because now I know John Corbett is an attorney. And he says that as a notice that this is not legal advice what I'm telling you, but it might be an advertisement. That said, I don't want you to dismiss John Corbett. He does have experience in the field for those of you that don't have experience getting into the courts. Now, I'm sure he's not going to argue any of the jurisdictional stuff I would. I would love to have an attorney become a lawyer and start doing so. It'll develop a whole other thing, but not for me. This is not that discussion. This discussion is for when you look at these stories, they're notice to you what to do and what not to do, and maybe how to be careful what you do and let someone else do for you. Notwithstanding John Corbett's intense desire to stop this TSA, I now see in this story a limitation. I think you could get him passed, but you'd have to be interested enough to do that and to explain how that would work and essentially test him as well. Right now I'm into looking for any ally that will advance the cause of our liberty, if you will, our freedom, if you will, the things of the presumption of innocence that get us through, and we be innocent in this world again, notwithstanding the dereliction of the government to do and blame us otherwise. Last September, Jessica Lundquist was traveling through Burbank, Hollywood Airport, a smaller community airport in northern Los Angeles, when a body scanner alarmed. In my experience from watching checkpoints, body scanners seem to alert on somewhere around 25% to 50% of passengers who pass through them, the overwhelming majority of which are patted down and found to have nothing. The alerts are false positives on machines that cost us billions of dollars by an agency that spends billions of dollars a year annually. Now, to me, I read that, and that's perfectly set up. I don't know what, I didn't read his complaint. He has it available. I'm looking at it there. If you heard and you listen to what I'm saying about how to approach this, and I hope this would be in his complaint. But see, this is what I'm going to tell you should be in the attack against the imposition of the rules of the TSA screener before you get to the airport. I don't say that. That's what the courts have said you have to do. But listen to that. He has an observation that he could write into an affidavit that shows that 25 to 50% of the people that pass, the overwhelming majority, which you have another percentage there, are false positives. There's nothing there. And now what do? You apply what they're supposed to do. If you start showing that they're doing things that come to a failure, and they've incriminated a whole bunch of people, that may not be what the administrative side says is the least invasive. And so you have, if you look at it that way, that's one point that ought to be addressed, that you could eliminate this. Not just, I found that valuable that he stood around long enough to figure out, that's a piece of data, folks, that you can bring into either a case, like I hope he did, or really pressing on the least amount of minimal intrusion. Then he says there are false positives. So that's two things. One is that they are false positives. Secondly, that the system has agreed to allow false positives to interfere with someone's right. And I say, always remember, you're stating this based on the premise and the presumption, I would have to say, because it says it's a presumption, rebuttable as it is, that you're presumed innocent. In this case, in the United States, the presumption is rebutted on what? A suspicion or probable cause. And so whether or not John Corbett's going down this path, I don't know. What I'm telling you is this has to be dealt with this way up front. Remember our lawsuit in 2013, lawsuit of Jared for the Money District that I was a part of. In 2013, we claimed that these sorts of intrusions are a waste, damage against the public treasury. You see, he mentions that here as well. He says these are spending billions of dollars a year annually that are all false, that interfere with up to 50% of the passengers. And I use the word passenger in quotes here because that's another term as well, notwithstanding I don't want to get lost. So he points to you, here's some four facts I would put together. I would go research some more. And this, again, applies in every subject matter of bureaucratic administration, how you analyze what's available to you to defeat what you're up against before you get there. But you at least throw it in a major question, and then you always realize the government has the advantage. You have to defeat that. All this can be done. I say this with a pretty optimistic sense of accomplishment and prevailing here against it, because we do it. But you just have to look far enough down the road to figure out where have they done the excess. And when I showed you and talked to you about the presumption of innocence, it's pretty much excess right out of the gate. And then I've read to you the court cases that show you, well, here, even the courts are saying it's too much. Even the FISA court said the government's willing to do this stuff in excess, even though it gave it continuing license. And so we don't check that. They take that as our consent. And this could be whatever subject matter that it is. In this case, it's traveling in TSA or DHS, or this could be property taxes, could be your mining claims, could be your property rights, it could be whatever. All this administrative potential, code enforcement. So let's keep going. But Ms. Lundquist did something that TSA screeners don't like. When told she would have to submit to a groin search to resolve the alarm, the screener clarified that they would need to touch her genitals. She refused consent. She said no. Notwithstanding that, the TSA screeners are not law enforcement, and it is not a crime to refuse to continue the screening process. But being told no hurts their ego, and so a screener, backed up by two supervisors, did what they may not. They told her she may not leave and that they would force her to comply if she did not. And so you see, those are people that are out in the street and facing the cops, you see the very same dynamic. When I'm telling you this is all translatable across the board, all the way wherever you deal with this authoritas that's trying to convince you it's an authority, this all applies across the board. So applied to the street, you ask for a supervisor after a cop stops you, they'll bring two. This evidence, they'll bring two, they'll get it wrong. But here's what they get wrong, and what I start to read here within the report that I need you to be aware of, and you look at this wherever you go. That's why I say don't get in their face. Just keep showing them where what they've done is in excess of their authority or contrary to a law. Don't start calling them out because they start getting vicious. Here, I feel for Ms. Lundquist because TSA screeners made the same exact threats to me in 2011. That's, to my mind, a huge statement. The policy is, from two witnesses now, that they threaten people. That becomes a powerful statement before a challenge to their authority in an administrative sense and in a judicial sense. I knew, he says, John Corbett writes, I knew that TSA screeners were unable to force a traveler to comply. Do you hear that, folks? He knows that they can't force a traveler to comply. My question now is, why isn't this more common knowledge that this woman had to go through this and didn't assert what they needed to do, even within the context of what John says he believes they should be able to do, which I don't believe is proper, but that's what we're going to get to here. The TSA screeners are unable to force the traveler to comply, and that their only lawful option is to allow the traveler to leave the checkpoint into the non-secure area. So, in his experience, he says, I continued my refusal until they let me go. But believing these federal officers under the threat of forcible compulsion, and after making and being refused another lawful request to have her screening video recorded, Mrs. Lundquist submitted to the search, wherein the TSA touched her vulva and buttocks without her consent. They, of course, found nothing. Let me go back up to that. See, these paragraphs are indicative of a notice to us if we just know to look for it. That the so-called federal officers that he puts in quotes could not do this. That she said that they could have screening video. That's notice to you that you can, that they'll deny you. You have to have that in your mind, that these dynamics are working, that you call them out at the time. Remember, I told you, taking control of the conversation from any code enforcement officer. You have to know, again, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Ignorance of the legal is no excuse. And then you find out they can make it up. And so you better put your mind over there and start to deal with the make it up part and be able to defeat that too. Why I finally came, I think, to the conclusion about moving their actions into felony. And so if they try to call the cops, you got them on a counter charge, don't you, before the cop that's supposed to be administering law. That's typically, though, I can't say it's a guarantee, but that might be the sheriff, and that sheriff is supposed to keep the peace, keep the law, the actual law. Whether they do or not, that's the other problem. Point is, you're making a better record. Let me get back to the story or I get lost in my thoughts about this, when in fact we have an example and I'm trying to get to somewhere. See, and this is where my problem happened right after I told you. He says and agrees that you have the right to be told to leave to a non-secure area. What does that do? What has John Corbett agreed that you have the right to do and don't have the right to do? You can be told to remove yourself from this non-secure area, but that keeps you from your right to travel, doesn't it? Again, under the presumption of an innocence, when, and they don't have probable cause and or suspicion, their alarms are false positives, you prove that. They, after false positive, they prove nothing. Most, maybe probably 90, 98, 99% of the time. There's probably 100% of the time nothing dangerous. And some small percentage of the time there's something that may have triggered it. As you all know, metal detectors are working that way. But he agrees that you should have the right to be told to go non-secure. I don't agree with that. I agree that unless they found something, you should not be further harassed. When is your presumption of innocence? That is determined when some of you step up and get into the administrative side of this and short out the policy or invalidate the policy by equity. And this is where I started to notice about the problem of attorneyship relative to John Corbett. He's not addressing how you stop this from the administrative side. He's dealing with it after someone's made the mistake, honest mistake, of walking into this buzzsaw. Now, I believe that she can prevail, that he can prevail on that, but what is the win? And this is, I guess I'll stop here. There's a lot more to say, I guess, about this, but what's the rub here? If she wins this case and he prosecutes this, what has he won? He's won that they have the authority to do that to people, except that when they find an alarm and there's no consent, that they have to remove themselves to a non-secure area. What does that do to your right to travel and your travel plans and your destination and your activities? I see a big failure right here. Now, she could win, but it'll be only to be told in the future that they'll tell you, well, if you don't agree with our methods of interrogation and inquiry, then you got to go away. And you forget in this story that means that the choice is that you either comply or you don't get to go where you planned. That's not a right to travel. That's not a right of presumption of innocence. That's in violation of the law just as easily. And it's not proper, but you see this attorney in a criticism of John, even though I would agree that if he's the front runner to do this, he's not explaining how you approach this quite right in the way I've read what the administrative procedures are about, why they're there, what the agencies do, how you do all that, what the courts have said about this whole condition. He's working, it's like I got cut and I'm going to put a Band-Aid on my boo-boo. And what the answer would be in the future, they're not going to cut me so deep that I get the bandage, that I get cut, but I'm not going to be able to then go on my journey. And so I'm going to end right here. You read this story as you will. There's things to regard I've asked people to get together. If it's with John Corbett, fine, pull something together, but bring your intelligence, bring your application. Hopefully you'll incorporate what I'm saying behind the woodshed proven by you with your own reading so that you are versed in what you're addressing. And you refine someone with the motivation, the capacity to move something into the court with the more powerful statement. And you get that tested beyond a reasonable doubt. And when you've listened to me, I go to the wall with that part. And our problem, as we've seen, my problem and our problem, and I'm talking about those of us and my colleagues, is that there is that system of oppression that will do everything to negate their obligations and duties under the law, as I evidenced in my discussion of my habeas corpus condition. When you challenge them correctly, they get rid of their problem. They will not answer to it. That should be, it's a very subtle truth that you have to appreciate. And so, anyway, this, I appreciate that someone's going to go after this. I don't know what it's going to turn out to be. I don't know. They're going to go through a United States District Court. He doesn't understand that that's not a court of competent jurisdiction. I told you this certainly will not go there. But maybe he will. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't say that. But most attorneys that I know of, just their eyes either roll back. They call you an idiot savant. They say you don't know what they're doing. You show them the black and white. They don't care. In fact, a couple of attorneys, their eyebrows raise, and they go, that's very powerful. And I said, yeah, so why aren't we doing that? And then they go, they stop. They have some excuse. So there's different levels of engagement that go on. You have to be available to understand what those levels are. And then I say anymore, because we're in a battle, pick your battle and then pick how you best prevail in that battle. And it may mean that you have to do some education. It may mean that you have to persevere long enough to make that education stick a bit, to show that there's a different, more powerful way to make it work, a different rationale. And until we come as a society that has this knowledge in us, I don't know what else to do. So that's my failure to you to suggest anything stronger. You can go out as viciously as you want, but there's going to be these things that happen. In fact, as I've said before, I'm working on some problems that when you come to the point when you realize every door is pretty much closed or conditioned, it has a gatekeeper, and you still have to get through, how do you resolve those problems? It becomes your real problem, because we don't have the numbers to expose that problem. That very evidence is a self-evident proof of a failure and a destruction, a dereliction of duty. I don't care what name you want to go. It's a violation of law, caucusocracy, war crimes, treason. You could, whatever you want to put on it, you still haven't solved that. And that's what I try again. We come back behind the woodshed to learn how to do that. We were supposed to. We didn't really know the importance of that. There's been a long time people have been taking advantage of our deficit. And I see that, again, I see someone needs remedy, and I see a guy willing, but I also see with my interpretation of how this works, and I've told it to you, so it's not unknown to you, that I see a failure. I see that we only go so far and not to the point where it's the law is working. It's always within the legal. My complaint with the attorneys relative to land law is they always stick, and you've heard me talk about this in land law cases against the EPA, the attorneys always stick the landowner subject to the agency when the land law says that agency has absolutely zero jurisdiction over that grant. In this case, John Corbett's not even using the administrative side, just going to go try to put the Band-Aid on the boo-boo. And so there's a different, again, on one hand, I thank anybody that helps out and a woman that gets remedy. I appreciate that. Otherwise, I'm looking at a false precedent here, right? We're looking at creating false precedents. And I don't know where the fault of that is, except that when I learned better, I started doing better. And if that means that John Corbett now has to do better, I think he would if given his aim is true. And his website's not more advertisement, as it says, as it intimates, than it is cause, getting something done. For your edification, I guess. I don't know what else to say. See, I get lost. I don't know what people want to hear, don't want to hear, don't like to hear, not even hearing. And so you'll find sometime in the future, I know, it's, again, this is the thing about knowing certain things, given the same state of affairs, and I don't see it changing. Some people in the future, if my files are ever available, and they can put two and two together, they're going to see the correctness of at least the beginning of the path that they need to take. And like I said, I've been down a lot of paths. I didn't see everything to be seen. Sometimes it's not necessary, but I can point to the path you need to be on, give you some pointers, as I do here every week, and say, if you're interested in this, or you see this as a wrong you need to make right, or even if you don't need to make it right, you can make it right. You're best to start with what I'm saying and let the amplification of your searching of what's out there, really out there, guide you further. And so, we have people that are being harmed. We have people maybe helping or the color of help, attorneys versus lawyers, law doing law. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. I think if this is addressed, those things that he wrote, he's a knowledgeable guy, John Corbett. He wrote, as I told you, just in the beginning, there's more in that document. Every paragraph has some things you can pull out to make as bullet points of, in a dynamic, a conditional situation against what they're supposed to be doing that could defeat that with an honest attempt in that regard. And not in any arrogance or any anger or any of that. It's just simply the black and white applied the way it's supposed to be. That's really all I'm ever telling you guys and gals. So here we have the scrutiny at the border, the scrutiny everywhere. They prey on people's ignorance, on gullibility, I suppose, as well. Again, how would they know to do this unless they know you better than yourself? Those of you that they know better, those of us that know better don't get caught this way, but this is what's out here now. The police use internet surveillance zones to monitor private purchases or swaps. And police use internet surveillance zones to monitor private purchases or swaps. First, I didn't quite get that. How do they do that on the internet? Well, it's not actually on the internet, except they do a couple things in tactics. This also leads us over to what they will do on the internet, actually. In particular, where we see maybe blockchain type things going on, or you see what we call censorship in the privateness of these social media sites. This relates to selling things on the internet, and I think this was through Craigslist. The police departments across the country, again, scrutinizing everything you do. They convince you or they don't disclose to you certain other things or certain rationales, and they prey upon what you don't know to get you to do the wrong things, potentially. I guess potentially this could save somebody, I guess, if there was a real bad actor, but this is not the intention as I see it. The police departments across the country are creating safe exchange zones in front of police stations or inside them to monitor internet purchases or swaps 24/7. According to the Newsweek, police have been encouraging the public to conduct internet purchases or swaps at police-run internet exchange zones since at least 2016. Tells you how much out of it I am. Never heard of them. Ludicrous, but there they are. They're still functioning. And I don't even want to go to the comment. I guess I'll read it and we'll stop because you can read the story. Yes, it's real. Charlotte Solis, Mobile PD's public affairs officer, states it's for people who made transactions in Craigslist or elsewhere to meet up and make that purchase. The police department is a safer place to make those exchanges than just anywhere. And so there is something here that makes sense that you don't, there's a lot of skullduggery. Again, people exploiting other people. We're not so nice to each other, I guess, is the bottom line for all this. But they use this, there's a whole other thing behind this thing that we know about, anybody who reads knows, that they want to bring scrutiny over your transactions and they put in your mind the doubt. In fact, they say if the people that you want to buy your stuff or sell to don't want to meet you at the cop shop, and be scrutinized by the police, maybe there's somebody you should be afraid of. And so there's a psychological attack going on here. The fact of it should be self-evident that it's a problem, that I believe this is an element of what's, they're just giving us notice of, that's going to become more the norm within the context of your digital, future digital life, and the requirement to go through that. So I don't know how many things that I talk about here. My mind goes blank, not being able to find all of them, because a lot of it, if you just think about it, there's just one wrong after the another based on what I just told you relative to the scrutiny and how, without your knowledge, you get yourself in trouble. What have we said before? Don't call the cops. Why? They become the killers. I have no apologist point in me at all about this at this point. It's so far beyond the pale, and there's no self-check, and we're dealing with the minus 80 IQs. I don't care how much school they have to go through. All of college has been reduced to bonehead college, and then you get the boneheads making policy because they're indoctrinated into this concepting of consensus, if you will, if I can put it in a term, which issues out of the university system. Again, the extension of who he sued. Those that aid and abet the criminal get enjoined as well. And as I say that, you should consider what that means. It means that when I looked at this, our lawsuit, I said, how do we get people I don't want in to or have argue in the lawsuit? I don't want to sue a bunch of people and have to argue with them. How do we do that? Well, if I make the connection that they're aiding and abetting the one I am suing, and I can deal with that one and get them, well, then they don't have a right to come in the case. But they're the aider and the better that can be enjoined as well. And so I've limited my workload tremendously, if not completely. In particular, where they didn't answer, so that was even better. But at any rate, there's, again, ways to take them out. There's ways to not make them a factor. You have to look well enough into certain things to be able to do that. You learn how to make it not a question. All court cases are based in issues. You present in equity no issue. There's not even a place for a judge to say. And so I'm just using a forum as the acknowledged objective place to determine the facts that were stated before that cannot be answered that are to be in my favor. And so we have this people believing that you buy something, you better to trust someone. Let's go down to the police. And this is a psychological warfare that I saw being used. I guess I could go on read. I know people read the stories. I don't know. I'm hesitant to read too much. I think you can do the reading. You'll do as much as you want, as fast as you want. You'll see things. I don't even believe I read so well. But the point is, there's certain things that come to me that set up a future for us. That whether you will engage it or not is not what apparently a lot of people are actually already doing, contrary to you. And this herd momentum is what brings in a mobocracy, in this democracy, what they call mob rule, becomes the new reality, the new normal. And so to me, this is just notice. I didn't know anything about it. Now I know about it. It sounds stupid as heck to me. It may sound stupid as heck to you, but there it is. That the government is actually taking this position, and I keep asking myself, well, if they take this position and this lunacy and this irrationality, and they set you up for the takedown as well, potentially. And then, like I said, they can show, they got facial recognition. You get put into a place that the facial recognition is what? Would they say false positive? And then all of a sudden you, the seller who's already looking for protection, are now facing on the ground if you don't get shot? They take a voice print while you're talking. They get real sophisticated. They get a robot vacuum cleaner come and take all your DNA. I mean, how lunacy does this? Do I start to get thinking about all? Why would they get you in a certain spot that they have control over? With all the technology I see coming down against people, into the control of these minus 80 IQs that are too psychologically stable to be normal people. As well, who in practice, if they want to complain that this is too harsh, don't fix themselves either. Why I say you have to go in and make the policy changes on the administrative side of this. They certainly aren't recognizing law of the land. And when you do, there's a system in place to protect you, and I have evidence of that and experience about that. When you do the assertion in equity against a code charge, they will not press the code charge, but they will also obstruct your equity remedy. And so that's that same thing as throwing your buddy out of jail at 2 o'clock in the morning when you file a habeas. They're not going to address the truth of this. There's way much danger to the occupier. What else can you do? You just keep persisting. You just sit there realizing that they're not coming against you in the same ways they may take out everyone else. They're not grabbing your groin. And so they set up things, saw the weapons of quiet wars. You consent yourself in into the fear of having to need a safe place, you snowflake. And there they are. There they have it. I don't know what else to say. They want to make you sound safe, and everywhere else you look, they're not safe. There's no safety, no guarantee anywhere. And there isn't, is there? And yet we lull ourselves to believe that there might be. Anyway, I won't... lots to say. My words are useless. You all know all this stuff in some regard. Maybe not like I tell you about how they interact with the occupier. I know you don't know about that, but most of you don't. And as I see errors in John Corbett, as good as he might be, he might be the fifth attorney I know in the world that is really a lawyer guy, but I don't see him responding correctly. And I say that on my experience of my other, they are friends. Don't associate with many people much, and not them either. But those that helped me out in law was attorneys that were lawyers that got out. They were open to how new things as well. That's also how you tell. Not because, we saw some stuff and it's right. You bring something that is a question even within the context of the system speak, and you show that it's a problem and that you may have an option to go through, and they will take that on readily. Anyway, so you'll find, if you're lucky enough to find a guy or gal like that, you'll recognize what I'm saying eventually. I was fortunate enough to have a couple take me under their wing and show me the reality of that system and that communication thing that I keep telling you about. You got to communicate. The judges aren't that smart. They also have liabilities if I don't want to go to that side, go to any derogatory view on their mentality. They have a certain due process they have to follow, and if they follow the book the way it's supposed to be written, and they have tons of cases to do, you can see they need to get through this stuff pretty quickly. They don't have time to work through your ignorance of how the thing would be, and so that's why you kind of do it that way. So here we have everyone's so security is so important. You got crotch groping the TSA agents for your security. You have cops that want you to sell stuff 24/7 in their lobby for your security. And then I look at this little study. It's going to go a little off the track, but I think it's important. It came through last night, I believe, as a retweet. Relative trends in hospitalization and mortality among infants by the number of vaccine doses and age based on vaccine adverse event reporting system reports from 1990 to 2010. You say, the guy from behind the woodshed sure jumped big far to there. Well, if they're all security, trying to be security-minded here, there, and everywhere, when you look at what this report says, you want to know, at least my question was, why are they so important? Why is it so important a few people going through these checks to be safe when they are not going to look at the safety of vaccines on this study of the reporting for the court that is made for harms, states that when you get a multiple of vaccine injections above 5, your chances of mortality and hospitalization, in particular mortality, increases 1.5 times. What I found even more intriguing when I read this is that, if I understand this correctly, male to female ratio rates, males are 1.5 times even more likely to have mortality due to vaccine injections greater than 4. 1 to 4, less. More than 4, higher death rate, higher hospitalization rates. And so here's a study where, we look at the reality of the system where it wants to profess to keep you safe. Apparently that doesn't match up when it comes to your vaccine, their vaccine agendas, their products that aren't proven safe. Their product insert says so. They want to call you some kind of anti-vaxxer because you see the harm that they don't want to disclose to you. You may be genetically predisposed to, as I said, your Title 50 allows to the government. How they get that, I don't understand, but there it is, black and white. You want to talk about that? Go ahead. I've talked to you for years about this one. And so, here we have a report, relative trends in hospitalization and mortality. The conclusion, or the abstract from which you're looking at reports to the claims, vaccine harms claims court, the vaccine court, shows a 1.5 time higher mortality rate for children that get more than 4 injections. And as I read it, a 1.5 times even higher rate males over females, if in that category as well. That this kind of a study, for those of you that are interested, so to give a lip service to the problem, and hear all the gnashing of teeth that I hear about this, you pull this together with, you're going to need a lot more information. I've told you how this works. I've told you what to pull together. Here's another thing that shows that there is harms that they were not, the agencies and the companies, on their word, weren't showing the harm, that they professed to be safe enough, and that's the problem, that now we have evidence that there are harms that are demonstrable, but then that's not enough. I need to tell you this. Those of you that will step up and start to pull these things together, you're going to be up against that policy of a risk management, which agrees they want some of you harmed. And part of the problem with this study will be if that 1.5 increased rate over 5 is within some bean counters rationale of acceptance of risk, this may not go too much further. So you're going to have to press that rationale as well. And if you don't know it's there to press, you'll lose. And I've talked to anybody I've talked to about this happens for this 5G. This is the same thing it's going to be for your smart meters, or is for your smart meters. It's, and by the way, the jurisdiction, the PUC of the state that I had a colleague send a letter in, they removed the cost down. They didn't do it completely correct. They still got to show some cost, but they moved their big old fee for reading your meter down to right above nothing. It's still there, but they knocked it out on one letter. And so, which somebody else took credit for, which is fine. The point is that I can show you that you can affect things when you speak correctly. But anyway, getting back to this, they're so worried about your safety and security until it comes to vaccines, and then they call you an anti-vaxxer or whatever, a criminal, relative to your consternation, your fear, your consternation relative to using this with your little one. And a study comes out and says, yeah, if you get more than 5 of these things, which there's a whole lot of other studies underneath that could have been done as well that I don't know why they didn't do them. I guess based on studies and facts from just the claims court, you don't get this type of vaccine constituent relationship stuff that you need. But anyway, they show an increased rate of harm. I don't think has been factored into the equations that some of you should be able to put together. Like I told you, you can see like through John Corbett's paragraph by paragraph, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5, who knows, 6 different things in there you could line item out that put up against what authority uses to hurt you. And so again, it's not to say anything about vaccines more than they're there. They use them. Anybody who comes against their plan, and certainly we can run to eugenics if you want to go there, and then looking at some other things that a particular group of people is pushing it on and on, but don't want to get that far. If we're not going to address the front end of it, what difference does it make about the back end? And this is the other thing. I don't care where the back end starts. I want to be able to stop this tip of the spear from poking y'all. And each one of us has to do that in some regard. So here we have, just to put this study back into what the abstract says, into context of the statement, 1.5 times higher mortality rate for girls and boys who get more than 5 vaccines. You do that what you will, for the reasons whatever you might, but here's to me an evidence, and the report came from NIH.gov, so you know this is a authoritative view. How much gets put off, extracted and used in the agency side, that's up to you, I think. You understanding what's going on. At any rate, so here you have my question today is, if there's wanting to think you're so safe, why'd they commit you to be an enemy combatant under their own because of their own dereliction? Why do they want to threaten you with your unsafety, provide the safe spaces which actually put you into unsafe conditions? So the safety is their meme and their theme, when in fact you get in the world and vaccines, when it comes to vaccines, it doesn't matter. They allow products that are not safe. And they have their rationale on how that is. And they've flipped the whole dialogue around, and they've given the presumption of rightness to a profit self-interest. And no one says anything about this. So move on here. The surveillance of all this is safety. You snowflakes need to never stopped and said you're not a snowflake. So now they continue. The report finds the U.S. has the largest number of surveillance cameras per person in the world. As I've been telling you, all these reports just confirm what I've been saying. You don't even know that in the United States of America, you've already been in the condition of the world you think is out there. I tell you, it's a carnival mirror of the world reflecting what's actually happening here that you don't notice. It's all transparent. Your transformation out of what you're, the republic you were to keep has been transparent to you. And it's done by a process. I've identified it for myself. If no one else has seen it, I've explained it. You go to the Jefferson Mining District website, see the cautionary warning that they give to their own people. We come outside the law to bring an adjunct policy to be bought for public buy-in so that we can transform your society. They tell their own that they're doing this. And then I get crickets. So report finds the United States has the largest number of surveillance cameras per person. Let's not confuse. China has the most cameras. The United States, unknowing to most of us, has the most per person. And yes, you're a person. Don't get... you're in that civil net, aren't you? So there it is. It's your subject status. Your presumption of guilt to be subject to the scrutiny. And so you start losing the fact of this, and you get yourself all wrapped around words that are... doesn't matter, because the status is what's you're treated by the people that have the power to treat you that way. And why? Because you don't step up the way I've seen you need to step up to make it irrelevant, neutralize it, make it irrelevant, or actually show it's a crime. So, what? In brief, when governments are seek to have more control over their population, data from the computer security website Precise Security reveals the top 10 countries and cities with the highest number of CCTV cameras, and this is talking CCTV cameras per person in the United States, highest in the world, if you didn't think you're already a surveilled open-air prison. Is that everywhere? I don't think so, but it's in all the places that are important. Coming to a pole outside your house near you when they start implementing 5G. You know how I was just thinking of that? You know how Google did Google Maps, and then you could select down and see the street view. And you know how that started out at just a few streets? That's how 5G gets implemented. You'll look at a map, and the street view will be the one main street. And then a year later, they got a couple of spur streets. And then a couple years later, they got a whole area of town done. That's how this gets wrapped up. So if you don't think it's coming your way, it is. Why? Because they need the Internet of Things, and they need those autonomous trucks at least. And there's a report on that. But the report finds U.S. the largest number of surveillance. So they want your security. They need to surveil you. This is a package deal. What you miss in this, in my thought, you miss is your presumption of innocence. But they do it on the threat that you're going to be harmed. When we see even John Corbett's information was at least 50%, he can see up to 50% is false positives. And I've been suggesting that's always going to be there relative to this digital data acquisition and people trying to reinterpret it for some purpose that they can run into a public-private partnership to make some profit with the government. Surveillance everywhere for your safety. The FBI teams up with the post office to get your fingerprints. At first, I was thinking that they were, because I've heard that they'll read your fingerprints and get whatever they want off the envelopes. And yes, we take special care about all that as well. But this was not that. They actually are teaming up with the post office to sell you into giving your fingerprints. And I suppose any other biometric information at the time when they get it rolling. That the post office has become, and has always been, is now that we look a little closer, is one of the waypoints for data acquisition. In fact, the post office is part and parcel to the crime against you. How do I know that? It's not, again, he's sensational, he's paranoid. No, I've got a couple of cases we're trying to work through where the post office is the agent of destruction within the system. Remember, postman, I think, there was a movie. Kevin Costner just come to my mind, the name. Go, that's a long, slow movie, but go read about, go listen and watch of the importance of the U.S. mail, what it was for. And you'll see it's part of the communication obstruction connection to occupation. And that's another secret. And that's something you need to pay attention to. They always need a legal address. What's that for? Service of process. What's that for? Subjectness. How do you get around it? There's one place in the postal service, the post office, that allows for the to making the difference. And when you read enough, you'll find out what that is. It's all part of the stuff I don't talk to you about because you think that's the answer. And they're trying to cover that up, but we don't, those of us, my colleagues, we don't let that happen. They've tried to on a couple rule changes. I think I've talked to you about this. Went in and told them that their rules were not sufficient. And after we did that, they had to change the rule to make note that they had encroached too far on the office, the post office, from the postal service. Two different functionaries that work since, I think, 1971 as the same. And so you see the covering going over your law versus your legal. The post office is an agent, change agent to the future they want. And so beware, be aware. And so the FBI that comes out to give you notice, that's what's going on. They also take your passports and all that biometric data there too, so why not, right? It's all pretty much consistent, isn't it? When you start to consider how this thing rolls together. How the prison netting has really worked. They work it really well. These people really are brilliant. I don't like saying that, but I have to give credit where credit's due that way. And here's the point. You have every option to start to learn better and become a force to be reckoned with in opposition. And your consent isn't after you get your groin grabbed. It's before. Or in not. In this case, oh yeah, you can go to the police department and do your deal in the lobby while we watch, the cops say. You can go down to the post office and give your biometrics for the FBI. So again, your security is more surveillance, is not reflected in vaccines. Death to babies, I don't know why. I mean, you think you want to protect the babies, don't you think? And when you aren't, maybe you got to relook at this. Not just that vaccines are good or bad. Why? What is that thing? And then I directed to Title 50. This is a big military operation. I can't get away from that. I don't know. Every chance I try to run and see if there's another potential, this is the amount. This view has the most evidence to support it, and there's nothing else that comes close. And all the public-private partnerships work to feed that system. It's all about the data. It's all about looking at doing the so-called AI, pattern recognition, nothing more, folks. I don't know why people don't more talk about this, but it's just a bunch. It's a people doing code, and it fails at that level. And I go, oh, there's a story about that. Let me move on here. Public-private partnerships, working for the profit. Google hands feds 1,500 phone locations in unprecedented geofence search. So we've talked about this before. Google's involved. They removed Dopey Evil. They're evil as heck. They are the evil. They're one of the main players in the future. Whatever you might hear, whatever you might think, they will hand over. They claim it's because the law provides it, but no one challenges what the extent is. What was interesting in this story, I want you to pay attention to, in Google hands feds 1,500 phone locations, was that Google returned an answer to the request that says, we don't want to go out. What you've asked for is too large an area. We will give you information to within 50 feet of a place. Was to me important to see in this. Not only can they could reduce it, and that's what they got. And from that, they made whatever they made. They found two people. Whether or not that was true or not, I don't know. But from the reduction request, you see, they can go down to within 50 meters of a spot. With your devices. That's what they offered. I don't know how tight this gets. I understand with more satellites, they can get down right pretty close. And so this was also a problem with this unwarranted search effect. The innocent people were being surveilled. And they were working with the government to do that. That was not challenged. The extent of that hasn't been challenged. It won't be by them. They are in the business of getting government contracts that they will not bite the hand that feeds them. And this is up to you to start understanding. These digital devices, this data is dangerous, and you give it to them all the time. As I can't remember now. I got so much in my mind. I'm forgetting where I see this stuff. Someone said that this is your digital exhaust. And I think it was in that AI video. That's what it was. It was that PBS AI video. They are working on your digital exhaust. And they can construct things. And they do. And I'm telling you, you don't want these minus 80 IQ psychopaths to take hold. You have to limit that exposure. So, again, it's all about for your security and your safety. They make these zones. Well, now you have a geofence that they can look in, and out of the people that they gave, I think it was 6 people they found, 2 of them they found were suspects. Now, how is that actually the case? I don't know, but that's what they believe. You very well could have been wrapped up in one of those and been mismarked. With complete innocence. Those that were that were innocent got scrutinized as well. So I ask again, not to bring up the old show over and over, but it's a reoccurring theme throughout what I talk about, presumption of innocence when? Where was the actual suspicion? It's the association, crime by association, isn't it? The crime by location, isn't it? But this is what's going on, and it's all based in the data acquisition and the storage. Time out of mind, I think it'll happen until someone pulls all the plugs and all the hard drives die. By then, they'll have new technology, won't they? It'll be in DNA, maybe yours. Who knows? Here, as we see, the data is all important in the security state, which is surveilling you, which is not to your safety, because if it was, you'd be looking to save every baby relative to their vaccine program. You'd be finding out that you didn't want babies to die. And remember, if you look at the numbers, the babies that are allowed to die is considered under risk management there would not make the 5% number that they claim makes their program successful. As I told you before, the other, that number, 3,000 or 4,000 people, I think it was in California, that didn't want the injection could not interfere with what the government claims they need at 95%. The 4,000 didn't even come close. It was, 0.1% of the population? And they still got beat down, they're being attempted to be beat down. This is how you also have to gauge it. Those that are being harmed in the risk management would not amount to an interference with the government's assertions. And yet they're still considered expendable. Is your little one expendable? Is what you have to start out, because you don't know. But read the product insert on those things. I don't want to move back to that, but data becomes all this home. Security and safety is a myth. They do it as an excuse. I've told you this over and over. That's the felony against it. They go against the laws of the United States, like your rights. That's a felony, and that becomes more sedition and into treason. And yet, where did it start? It came from a dereliction and a sort of treason in allowing the attack in 9/11 to get this status of enemy combatant and removing your presumption of innocence, didn't it? That you never stood up, notwithstanding how many times I've made broadcasts over the 10 years here that I've been broadcasting, who read my stuff before, that we should have been standing up for ourselves and saying no. Saying no. Not say no after they cut me and grab my groin. No, say it before. Say it as they're moving in. Here's how important. Another side notice. Here's how much the surveillance society is important, how valuable it is in society. I was a little bit shocked about this because, you know, I thought that airline pilots got a lot of money for what they do, and rightfully so. They got a lot of responsibility. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Listen to who actually has the most value in this society as we move forward to show you what you're looking for in the future. You will not escape this. Business will not let these investments go to waste. Now, it can happen that they become wasteful and no value, but that's going to be up to you to press. No different than when I say stop using the fiat, start engaging in real money, the what we call real money, the gold and silver coin. Deal in that. Start to truncate your, stop supporting that system of fiat that's going to be exploded here in a little bit. As we are hearing, there's a another 2008 seeming to roll around that they figured out how to mollify, which the repo, again, property's being repossessed. People that don't understand property rights at all. And so this whole thing is just a manipulated like taffy. And you keep involved in it, and they keep paying that. They keep paying for the destruction, your destruction with this kind of a system that pays for these people. Looking fast-growing these fast-growing jobs in 2020 offer six-figure salaries, and they might surprise you. Looking ahead of 2020, you may be contemplating a career switch. If so, boy, how many career switches have I heard I had to be subject to in all my life? Oh, you got to be trained here, retrained that. You realize that, no, this thing's moving. It's not a plan. At any rate, so you'd either do or you don't. And this is how, where you either starve, you comply, or you die, right? I mean, how many times have I written that over my 30 years of writing stuff? Wow. Comply or die. We never stop that habit and addiction. If so, it's probably the best to consider moving into a path where growth is on the uptick and jobs are likely to be more plentiful. Absolutely, folks. If you're going to be in the system, you better start going where they'll pay you. Otherwise, you better have to have an alternative, right? Your own alternative, not the one they feed you. Not the feed, but the food. Lincoln's latest report on emerging job trends points out that those promising job positions are, and that there are a few surprises. Engineering jobs, particularly in AI, are perennially popular and dominate the list. In fact, data specialists are the best paid by the list of all people, all jobs. And to show you how valuable data is to the system coming in. It's no longer really anything else. There's just, this is where it's at. And I'm not going to go through the list. This is just an indicator that if you don't understand the momentum, and this is a monstrous momentum, you're maybe not appreciating really how fast this thing can move in. And the people themselves that are putting their talent because of this $143,000 a year job, what they're going to do. This AI is really more bean counter statisticians than they are anything else. And they will all deal the risk management mode and models, and they have nothing to do with reality. It has to do with where the profit can be made, and right now it's in data mining you and making up stuff with that data. And that's the money the FRNs, whatever they pay these people. It doesn't matter. It's valuable. It works in the system now. That's where the money's going. This is not a joke. This is an indicator of the reality. And then we see this hitch in the giddy up. I thought it kind of funny because in digital, well, now the data specialists are still important behind the scenes. They don't have to operate the computer itself, but on the input side, you might be seeing typewriters, especially if you go to maybe Russia or China, as China now follows Russia to tell the government offices to remove all of their foreign computer equipment and software. And so in this war, this trade wars that are going on and all this stuff, you're watching the separation, digital separation in the world. It's going to be a serious condition. China is moving to isolate itself. Russia, and I remember reading this back, Russia told their government to buy typewriters again. There was no explanation about it. We haven't heard any too much more. But the point is that we're having there's a splitting of the digital world, and we see it right here. And the government of China got the technology from the West. There's going to be a data specialist race to have bean counters and data specialists make AI work for the ends of government. And we hear a lot about China, and I've told you that was the pivot was how to make this stuff work in large populations. China was the best place. It's the most authoritarian. It's got the most constructive infrastructure, and it's got the bucks to put forward because the bucks are what made up, right? So they count for it, but it's not done on the way you and I think. And besides, their national security is imperative to keep, and that has no value. It's priceless, so money's no option, I guess. They'll just start putting people to work. And so we see a very big deal here. In this story, China tells the government office to remove all foreign computer equipment and software. Russia went to typewriters. Back to the future, folks. This is what you do when you want to stop an infiltration or a potential attack. It's what I've been asking you to consider. Now, I don't know about typewriters, but you certainly cannot embrace a lot of this digital technology without a mind as to what's being done with it. When you see data specialists being the best paid, highest value in your society at the time, you really have to at least start scratching your head a bit. I don't know what more to say, but you at least should have a thought. And for me, this thought leads over to another discussion. Again, it's always interesting to me how the feed comes through and what's there to pick from each week. Writing from Technocracy News, Day 4, Technocracy versus Communism, Socialism, Fascism. Here we see Russia going to typewriters, China saying get rid of your digital equipment. I'm sure they're going to have their own because of the technology they stole from the United States in all that. You see Hawaii Communications Company, they're the biggest in the world. There's no deficit of technological prowess in China. So this digital divide, it's going to be like the new Cold War. It's a continuing war. Nobody ever really works it together for you and I, and they're not intending to, and the place is not wired for it. But Technocracy versus Communism, Socialism, Fascism pointed out again to me after I read the story about China and Russia. Again, I want to remind you, and I'm that it's not, anybody that puts labels on what we're watching is missing it. You're defeated. You're either intending to defeat yourself or you're a player to defeat others. But if you think this is communism, that you see China and then Russia, you think the now socialism in Russia, you think that's what's going on? They're not just getting rid of technology. They're incorporating their own to do the same thing their way. And so this is the thing you have to be careful of looking at. This was in another, like a list that you need to see, Technocracy versus Communism, Socialism, Fascism. Patrick Wood gives you a chart and the distinctions between technocracy and other governments. What I want you to notice in this, and this is the distinction, if there's a difference between Patrick Wood's work, and I haven't read lots, all of it, I've heard him speak a couple times, and I haven't read his book, but I've read some of the things he writes, we're really consistent. Where I will tell you I make a distinction in this is I do not, and now you read his charts and he shows you that science is what technocracy uses and leads with. And I tell you that science is a fraud. What I see is science is a cover. It's an authority you might buy into, but it's not. Patrick Wood uses this technocracy as the end game. I will suggest to you it's a tool to the end game. And I think the distinction needs to be made and understood because it doesn't end with the fraud, see. It's a tool to get you to buy in to authorita, to promote the agenda. Patrick Wood explains to you here, like I have, and this is another opinion, that this technocracy that you see in this digital science, surveillance, digitization of the world comes under the science, but it isn't amenable to a political title. And you need to understand that people always seem to get this, they want to name what this up is that we're up against. It's a method of your destruction. It's using, in Patrick Wood's view, his chart shows that science is what technocracy relies upon. I believe that the powers that are working this thing through, the future we want, which is not your future, are using this as the tool because I've seen the science as a fraud. The fraud couldn't be the end game. Now, that said, read Patrick Wood's stuff. I mean, he's going to line you up on this thing in this regard. If we take Russia going to typewriters and China going to whatever they're going to go and think this is a battle between what democracy and communism and fascism and socialism, you're missing it. It's going to be kind of all of that. And I've explained how that works in prior broadcasts. So very important discussion that Patrick brings out. He shows you the distinctions as he sees them. And I just, when I saw the first thing come up that science is what technocracy relies on, it reminded me to tell you Patrick Wood would say that that's the end game. In fact, he says it in the chart. And I want you to be open up a possibility to think it's not. It's a tool. It's a weapon. This science is a weapon. Technocracy is a tool. It's a method of approach that they're using. And it's been around for a long time. Decades, decades, and decades. Almost maybe 100 years now. And so it's underneath the skin, if you will, that we don't see how it's transparent as well. And I've told you that he worked this consensus, this political lobbying condition on you. It's written into your laws already that you may or may not know. And I say that that republic, again, what, China's a republic, right? North Korea's a republic, isn't it? I mean, the word's not really telling us what really goes on. I know the distinction in the United States of America because of the land law and the system that's supposed to protect that grant. That's a distinction that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. That's how I define the distinction. The titles don't tell us actually what we're up against and what we're dealing with or what we have or what we don't have. And that's why I say it takes a deeper study. You can't be someone that speaks in titles and name calling or listen to someone like that and think that they're helping themselves or you in understanding better the condition you hear me talk about every week for how many years, and I don't touch on. I can hit it from anywhere, folks, and go right to the same, eventually get to the same point. My desire is that you understand there's something to do about this. And it is something you can do something about, however small the first step may be. So, anyway, technocracy versus communism, socialism, fascism. Yes, it's. I gave him a tweet. I said, science, Bing fraud, science in name only. And yes, political forms are traps. He says that there's a trap. And I said, yes, I gave him a thumbs up. I add this consensus warning, and this is the thing I've told you before. They explain, they identify, they're outside of what they do. These people that impose upon you, be it this 9/11, be it the Agenda 21, what we know as the next goal is A2030, the sustainable debt, the modernization laws, food security, the security laws, all that stuff comes by this consensus. And the consensus warning to their own people in part states that in the traditional forums, now understand the traditional forums are what? The things we know like fascism and socialism and communism and all these isms. But in traditional forums, the mechanisms for determining who participates directly in the writing and administration of law are spelled out in constitutions, charters, statutes, and rule. And they're saying, and when you look at this as a warning to their people, this policy consensus agenda people, which you might know as the Hegelian dialectic, as I've told you, is not really completely right, but it's close enough for most people that have heard that. You see that they operate, that they're telling themselves, their people, they operate outside of the dictates of charter statutes and rules and constitutions. And they do. And what they do is they attach themselves after a comma onto your law. And they say, they give lip service to the savings clause, and then they come outside by a process that they've already had the legislatures agree throughout the world to implement. And no one goes in to check whether the savings clause was complied with. And let me get back to the beginning, near the beginning of the broadcast. That's all we did to cut the value, my colleague did in writing the letter, to cut the cost of reading a meter in the smart meter area. I had him go to the statute in the APA for his state, and I had him enforce the savings provision that said that they didn't do that. And so we got a response. It may not have been a more complete response, but that's because we couldn't get anybody else to keep plugging away. Well, I keep telling you, you got to make a bigger front. They keep pushing. They keep the pressure as long as they think they can get around you. And when there's not much response or follow-up around the proper thing, or they can mitigate your harm so that you don't main matter to other people, then they move where they can. They move the line so far, and then they've got that much. It's that incrementalism. And so back to here, technocracy. Don't confuse it for a political party form. These things are outside of that. Do not put a label on what you're watching. It's other than maybe you can see, like I tell you, what's coming on you is a war crime. What's coming on you is treason. What's coming on you is sedition. What comes on you is felony. And in every one of those words, I can pull the elements to show that, and I have in this broadcast. And so here we have, I've just told you, high crimes and misdemeanors are worse. And I hear, you know, national crickets, or global crickets against a very simple infiltrator, occupier. And they were, again, I have to give them credit. They really did it. So in this digital realm, they come contrary to your constitution, charters, and statutes, which you complain because you don't realize it. They're coming contrary to the law, and you complain the government's now acting in the law because they have infiltrated that government. And they're coming contrary to everything you expect. And part of the way the place of the United States was written, at least, was that you had to keep something, and you didn't. It's really, really written right here. There's more stating around this remedy, this warning. But focused on that technocracy article where he's saying, don't confuse technocracy to a political structure. Absolutely correct. And the people that are implementing this destruction, this punitive harm against everybody globally, are telling us they come by no law. They come by what they want. And they get you to buy in. How many times, again, did William Roberts talk to you about that? And so he said, become vocal, local. And I said, yes, that's how this is how what we're doing. You can't necessarily get the global structure. You can't get the national structure. You absolutely can start to affect your local structure and how it implements. And until we get a bigger following of that, understanding of that, it's going to be a slow road, and boy, has it been. And so I don't know what else more to say. I don't know what to say beyond that, except we're in a digital world. It's going digital. Digital specialists are the best paid at this point, I mean, within the context of these jobs, as this report was showing. So how does, in this digital world, how do the 1% keep control? There was an interesting little study in here that came up as well on the links this week. How the 1% scrubs its image online. And we talk about censorship and things, and I was looking, well, this is partly how this works. But when you get a bunch of people that are all part of the agenda and there's big money changing hands behind the scenes, whatever done, favors being done, you know, public-private partnerships, how does this thing work? Well, this is a little insight, how the 1% scrubs its image. Well, I don't know about the number and all, but this was an insight. A prominent figure from Jacob Gottlieb to Betsy DeVos got help from a reputation management firm that can bury image-sensitive Google results by placing flattering content on websites that masquerade as a news outlet. One little insight on how it's done. I could go read the story. The point is, you have people that are in business to go and trick the internet and systems that are willing to be tricked. And then I'm called on, I guess I'll just go this far. We're talking a little bit, Mint Press, I think, was talking about this, his former military intelligence Israeli guy who's talking about Epstein, and he's now in public relations. How many public relations campaigns that are psyops? Former military, Israeli military? I don't think so. This guy is one of these people, reputation management. This is really just, this guy is in public relations. He's in public perception management. Former Israeli military. I don't think so. But here's the story, how they do it, though. Again, right here for us to understand. It's not just censorship. It's manipulation. It's management perception. And all you have to do is have enough money to pay a company to flood the market with differential information. In fact, this information for these people they've named allowed for... It was like Rockefeller, I think it was at Rockefeller, he was handing out dimes. They had to turn his reputation around, and they showed him handing dimes out to, that was real silver then, right? Showed him handing out dimes to make his perception to the public better. Same thing has been going on forever. Here it is, digital, they can do it digitally. You think if they can do this digitally, and they can flood the market with information that they need to get an outcome, you think that could be worked against you? And I don't mean the censorship. I mean against you. Eventually, if someone targets you, or a class of those that are you, like anti-vaxxers, people that believe in Second Amendment, people that don't like the TSA, anybody, do you think that they can start to make an image in the internet, which becomes your reality, your life, and who these high-paid, highest-paid jobs and data specialists are focused on, the industry is paying for. And they make, on that, those decisions, don't they? They make the decisions on what goes forward. And so we say, this story came up. Be careful what you wish for. TikTok tries to stop bullying on its platforms by suppressing those it thought might get bullied. So if you are a snowflake type of people and you get bullied, then you don't get to see, you get to post, but you don't get to see the onslaught of bullying that comes at you. You're filtered out. So this is a direct effect of what I just said. They can control what you see. You don't have to have a bunch of flooding going on. You just have to have a company that's willing to block out your stuff without you really knowing. It's a little like shadow banning in a little bit different thing. Be careful what you wish for when you demand the internet platform police the internet for any and all bad stuff. Remember, for your safety and security, come to our police department. And we'll help you out. Probably help you in farther, maybe the jail cell to protect you. There was a lot of fuss and cringing when this story broke on part of TikTok's content moderation strategies, including suppressing videos by disabled, queer, and fat creators. And so, this digital world is going to be digitally controlled. We see the top, so-called top 1% can scrub their bad image and they can create a new one. They're done through perception management people, reputation management. They're also that Israeli military guy that's starting to out the Epstein. I want to know who's he working for, because I don't think he's former. Who's he working for? And what image are they tending to do now that they're trying to show that all of your political members that you've heard in the news are compromised? And I give credit to Gary L. I think he's mentioned that over and over and over. I mean, he's been the most vocal that I know. I mean, it's my thoughts, but he, I think, has been pretty verbose to explain that as a problem. How else do you think this is working? And this is the other thing. I stop looking at this when it becomes so obvious. It's self-evident. Why are we even... It's not that I forget it. It's not that I don't turn away. I turn away. Why are we making it a discussion? Let's just get after it. Get after it, because if you don't, they're coming after you on their terms. So be careful what you wish for. This TikTok is another social platform. It's really kind of nuts. I looked at it not knowing where to take the broadcast and who to. I'd like to get more young people aware, but I looked at that and what a fiasco. And I'm not video oriented. I'm not 15 second discussion oriented. I suppose it would take, I could, but boy, what a lot of work and time and who I would affect and how I would affect them were relative to other things that I think are more important to do. And so, this is how you're censored. This is how you can be controlled. This is what your perception is in the world that you are walking into, where companies are paying the highest value to data specialists. And you know the government's sitting there to utilize all of that. Again, this doesn't come without a payoff somewhere. And typically that's not paying you, since you're the product. Now, what they mentioned on this, I think it was this, this is what the story, the TikTok story. They mentioned, a la the infamous paperclip maximizer thought experiment, what's the most efficient way to stop bullying? Some figured it might be hide the likely to be bullied rather than the actual bullies. So I didn't know what, I don't know some of this stuff. Paperclip Maximizer jumped on a wiki, Less Wrong, and it tells me what the Paperclip Maximizer thought experiment is. And I started to read through it, and I realized, at least for me, I realized something that didn't, again, it stops making a bit of sense. And I don't know that I have this understanding so wrong. But this paperclip maximizer is a canonical thought experiment showing how an artificial general intelligence, even one designed completely and without malice, could ultimately destroy humanity. The thought experiment shows that AIs are apparently innocuous values could pose an existential threat. In a place of security and safety, how are they going to let this happen? But this is an analogy the guy relates to, this paperclip thought experiment. And I started to read a little bit about it, and I started to think about how this really works. What we're walking into with all these high-paid data people, what do they do? What are they actually doing? And I'm not a I'm not a proponent of AI as an actual intelligence. I've said over and over, all I know it is, and all I've ever understood it be in hardware fabrication, R&D, as well, was pattern recognition, ever. Now, you can do some creative ways to do that, and there's a lot of things that you have to do in order to look at the type of data you need. In fact, that's the key, I think. So you're not looking at everything. You just look at what you need to look at. You figure out what that is. The machine doesn't do that. The machine's programmed to do that. And I think this is where my thoughts started to leave when I read about this paperclip, the maximizing paperclip thought experiment. The goal of maximizing paperclips is chosen for illustrative purposes because it is very unlikely to be implemented and has a little apparent danger or emotional load, parenthetically, in contrast to, for example, curing cancer or winning wars. This produces a thought experiment which shows the contingency of human values. This produces a thought experiment which shows the contingency of human values. And I'm making a highlight for that because, anyway, I just won't say quite yet. Think about that. This thought experiment shows the contingency of human values, the need for them in this program, in this artificial intelligence. An extremely powerful optimizer is what this is, and a highly intelligent agent could seek goals that are completely alien to our orthogonality. I got it before. Orthogonality thesis, and as a side effect, destroy us by consuming resources essential to our survival. Description, first described by Bostrom in 2003, well, this is just recent stuff now, a paperclip maximizer is an artificial general intelligence, AGI, whose goal is to maximize the number of paperclips in its collection. If it has been constructed with a roughly human level of general intelligence, the AGI might collect paperclips, earn money to buy paperclips, or begin to manufacture paperclips. Most importantly, however, it will undergo an intelligence explosion. It would work to improve its own intelligence where, quote, intelligence is understood to, in the sense of optimization power, the ability to maximize a reward utility function, in this case, the number of paperclips. The AGI would improve its intelligence not because it values more intelligence in its own right, but because more intelligence would help it achieve its goal of accumulating paperclips. Having increased its intelligence, it would produce more paperclips and also use the enhanced abilities to go further self-improve. Continuing this process, it would undergo an intelligence explosion and reach far above human levels. It would innovate better and better techniques to maximize the number of paperclips. At some point, it might transform, quote, first all of Earth and then increasing portions of space into paperclip manufacturing facilities, close quote. I'll stop there. Doesn't the first, second paragraph right above that say what I've been telling you? The AI would improve intelligence not because of more values intelligence is right, but because more intelligence would help it achieve its goals of accumulating paperclips. That sounds like a bunch of our society. It just goes about collecting. Doesn't have purpose. But I don't think that's general intelligence. That's a human. I don't know these animals. I don't want to treat us like animals. Having increased intelligence, it would produce more paperclips. Would it, folks? If it has average and general human paperclip intelligence, would it continue to produce paperclips? I think this thought experiment is sort of a brain fart coming out the gate, that logic gate, isn't it? Because if we ascribe general intelligence, that would require how you're brought up, how you're programmed in your own even biological brain. And that within it has needs and wants and desires that also have constraints, that have a rationale behind them. That when you look at this, is really, I think this stops. There is no thought experiment. It's a fabricated experiment to try and say human values are important when, in fact, there is no actual general intelligence in these computer programs. Any such appearance has to be from the one making the program. And so this thought experiment is a failure of the one making that condition, it seems to me. They say that's an infamous paperclip maximizer thought experiment. It seems to me that when you take the general intelligence applied, it's not fulfilled by that sort of a program, and it is the responsibility of the programmer who creates it. And therefore, to me, the thought experiment cannot show that the system under general intelligence would consume everything to make paperclips. Because I think at some point, people with general intelligence would ask, at least, why? And at some point would come to the point that they're making paperclips to the expense of themselves. And in reality, they would probably die because they didn't feed themselves or whatever. And if they did feed themselves, maybe they forgot to procreate. Maybe that even fell away. Because there's nothing in this life thing that we can apply to this thought experiment or that's applied to the thought experiment to make it actually a thought experiment where we can, fancifully, we could say that it would consume everything. But that's just like, if I turned on a machine that I programmed to do one thing, if I told a computer to, on its graphical interface, calculate the most efficient way to infinity, I think we'd have the same type of thought experiment. I think that machine would just keep going until it tried to find infinity. Because you never, even the youngest brain that has any thought about numbers and counting knows that infinity is a big one that you can't get to. That general intelligence, the machine would just kind of lock up because it would say, wait a minute, I can't get there. I think on general intelligence. And so we ascribe, can I put the anthropomorphic, anthropogenic projection onto what the silicon does? Cannot really happen. And so they ascribe to this TikTok the potential of the decision being made by this artificial thing. It's not even intelligence. Is what your future liabilities and vulnerabilities will be to these data specialists, I guess is where I want to go on this. This is infamous, and to my mind, it doesn't even equate, again, it's a brain fart out of a logic game. It doesn't begin and end anywhere. It's our imposition on that. And so that's the danger. We are a fallen thought. We're a fallen nature. We're a fallen intelligence. Best as we might come at it, we're going to be glitched and make mistakes. We've got our own matrix going on. And yet we're relying all of digital reality on people that are highly paid, who have no scruples to have a thought experiment that incorporates actually general intelligence and understanding that it's not what they do. They're bean counters that know how to program logic gates. Period. And they're built on statistical models that have no relation to reality. And now I've described what? Climate change. I've described any of the number of modernization and security principles. I've described the security system, how it was set up. I've described being determined to be an enemy combatant under what? An AI that gobbled itself up because it had no thought to it. It had no general intelligence. And I've just described a cop. Not my words. The Supreme Court's declared that for us. Thank you very much. And I heard crickets. Another thing, anthropomorphizing everything from our perspective and time here. Kind of got me irritated a little bit. Didn't know what else to do. I don't know what else. I mean, I just wondered. Human values. The human value was not incorporated. That's the problem. Those are kind of subjective anyway, but what is this human value, this human imposition that can't be done on silicone? What is that, that you then make a thought experiment? That you look around and that anthropomorphication is everywhere you see to justify a condition that gets you to be told a little bit more of data, putting a little bit more, flooding the data stream, the thought stream, to dilute it a bit, to get you to believe certain things are what they are. I find this stuff everywhere. It really irritates me a bit. Who's the one executing the code? Who's the one that executes the article? What do they include? What's in that code? How do you decode these articles? The stuff is it's constrained by the data processor, the data specialists. And they are prejudiced by the data specialists, by their limits as well. And we know that when we look at data specialists that work on models and not reality, and when we apply it to reality, it don't fit. And yet we're sold it that this is what happens. That somehow this is a reality and it'll be throughout time. And I found a little bit of this reflected in another article. It irritates me because I don't know what else more. I hope people are picking up back on that. They said that intelligence was an optimizer. I don't know about you. Just another example, thought example for my. I mean, my thought experiment was, well, my defragger on my computer is an optimizer. That doesn't make it intelligent. Oh, it's good at reorganizing and shuffling and compressing and all that, but it's not intelligence. It's not even the hard drive. It's not even the data on the hard drive. So as a thought experiment, the fact that it's just merely an optimizer doesn't mean that it's applicable to anything. And then why was it with a human value, so-called, would you put a machine in the world that was destructive to its own ends, its own instruction set? That's the human value that is missing, that you don't do that. You don't create cherry red buttons. You don't go and you make vaccines that kill people underneath the auspices of a bean counter saying the risk management says we get to kill them because we're the government. But this is where our digital life is mimicking the reality that we've allowed for decades, if not a century. Humans were not center stage, how ancient cave art puts us in our place. Interesting thought, I thought. Coming out of the garden again, and I finally realized this coming out of the garden, we had a problem. It didn't hit me till after, but I started to catch on when I read this little sentence here. How we anthropomorphize history on interesting stories, these cave drawings, and how they get there, and all this other kind of neat stuff that are going on in the question, because we were never witness to it all. We just had some people claim they found them there, and then the stories that come out. And so, fascinating stuff. I want to believe in certain areas, but there's certain things you got to kind of give over to, we don't know. And here we have one of those things that you surmise. The story goes on to talk about these pictures that are on the walls and the ceilings, and you have to understand what that took. But one of the boys that found this later reported, and I don't remember now, this is in France or someplace, in 1940, four teenage boys stumbled almost literally from Germanic-occupied France into the Paleolithic age, and they found these drawings, and one of the boys later reported that they stunned and elated, that they were stunned and elated, they began to dart around the cave like, quote, a band of savages doing a war dance, close quote. Another recalled that the painted animals in the flickering light of the boy's lamp seemed to be moving. We were completely crazy, yet another said. And then the author interjects, although the buildup of carbon dioxide in a poorly ventilated cave may have had something to do with that. And there was my first indication, this was a setup article that's going to anthropomorphize an anthropomorphic condition to try and sell me on what? Climate change. And boy, I don't know that I could be wrong. Why would we do that? Why would I say that, carbon dioxide? Have you ever been involved where you got carbon dioxide poisoning? If you have, you know you're not dancing and elated and crazy. In fact, it kind of creeps up on you. And you're not doing much of that at all. And so there was my first incongruity that kind of calls my attention that this is a setup article. And I'm not going to really see, within the viability of the story that's out there, that there's cave paintings, someone has written in and diluted the data with the perception they want. And you can read this story through, and I was reading through it after I saw that. I started, the very next paragraph starts to go into tourism. All right. Well, that's one of the things that they do in this agenda. You're going to get rid of all your production, and we're going to have people come and look at your forests, right? They kind of discuss in an opinion. These guys have never been there. These stories are written in an opinion of what went on. And so they pull you into the fact that they're talking in some rational form, that there's something real to divine. I guess you could think of it that way. It's possible. But to me, a possibility of what could and should is not actual reality. In fact, that kind of thing will make you misdirect you, actually, because you start to foreclose other potentials. and our minds are somewhat wired that way to do that. And they talk about the gets into Fout. Now that they mention the carbon dioxide, they pull off and they start talking about the cave drawings and who might have been and who these people might have been and the year. All that the timing is, I've always now been a question when you look at what, how they time things. They put it in the context of this, of you today and taking selfies and how how that would relate to the psychological condition of these people, on and on and on. And then the last, one of the ends of the paragraphs here, moving down, they add this. This is sloppily, this condition that he says, this narcissistic view that we have today that he views as not in the past, this is slot, he says, this narcissism is a not, the sloppily defined psychological condition, I admit, but fitting for a man so infatuated with his own image that he decorated the walls of his golf clubs with fake Time magazine covers featuring himself talking about Trump, is now a political statement, not pictures on caves. And then he goes on to this. On top of all this, we have been served an eviction notice from our own planet. The polar regions are turning into meltwater. The residents of the southern hemisphere are pouring northward towards climates more hospitable to crops. In July, the temperature of Paris reached a record-breaking 42.6 degrees centigrade. Now, there's more to find here. I'm going to run out of time. That is not a story about cave paintings. That is what we heard before, how the 1% interjects a new image of itself into your psyche. Laced through the facts of this story, which would be true, are these interjections of an agenda that are the antithesis of what they start to tell you they lead into, which also could not be a caveman considering he put the cave drawings there because of climate change, which the gentleman mentions, the author mentions twice. And so, here's how you dilute and change the perception of the internet. You dump a bunch of this stuff in, and people's minds are altered to accept the nonsense that they're being fed to buy into. And you can't accept it, or you can start noticing this is the technique. And until you notice that and start to work against it, I don't care about working against that article, but this is the technique that they're using to do the more substantial harms and punitive harms, such as the carbon tax, such as modernization, such as you got to come down because you're not secure in the world. We're going to protect you. We're the cops. We're here from the government to help you. We're the TSA. Give me your crotch. No, we're going to grab you anyway. And what do you get to do? You get to go whine about whether or not you're going to get a remedy for that. That's not the place that I was told that I can find that exists that has been abandoned. And they've done it through the technique of this perception management that you either buy into or in your failure to buy into, you don't address at all, and it wins again because of the way this place is wired. We need to rethink how that works. I hope you take some of my suggestions to heart and put them in practice because that's where it's going to work in the actual doing of the thing that you want to, the wrong you want to make right. Thank you, Grimner, for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. Appreciate all you do there and all the work keeping us going and the blogcaster ability and all y'all that are simulcasting this and everywhere else that you send it out and the likes and whatever, repostings of the broadcast. I appreciate all that for what you do there. I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Well, that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.